Hey, Trey here. Two things. First, I'm not sure if you know it, but Us and Them was honored with 4 Associated Press Broadcasters Awards, including one for excellence in public service through journalism. Second, it's the time for the Spring Pledge Drive at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And if you value the work that our Us and Them team does in telling the stories about the things that divide Americans, would you consider making a pledge of support to West Virginia Public Broadcasting? You can call or text to 1-800-RADIO-87, or you can go online to WV Public and find the little red button at the upper right-hand corner. And when you pledge, let them know where you live and that you're a listener of Us and Them. Doing this would be a big help for our show and the other great programming at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And thank you so much. Hey, this is Trey, and you're listening to Us and Them. You might recall an episode we put out last spring called Farm Wars. It's about farmers' never-ending battles with weeds, especially pigweeds, or as some call it, Satan's weed. It's one of the hardest to get rid of. A controversial herbicide called dicamba has divided the farming community. For more than a year, my colleague Loretta Williams and I have tracked how the pigweed story has played out in Arkansas. We originally produced a piece for the investigative reporting program Reveal that focused on the dicamba use. Loretta and I have been to Arkansas several times, and we were there last winter when farmers and the Arkansas State Plant Board debated on how to regulate the use of dicamba during this year's growing season. Summer is over, and we're moving into harvest, and I thought it would be a good time to check in with Loretta just to see how things have played out this year in Arkansas. Hey there, Loretta.
Hey, Trey.
And also joining us is someone who helped Loretta and I out immensely over this past year. Daniel Breen is a Little Rock-based reporter from KUAR and Arkansas Public Media. Hey there, Dan.
Hey, Trey. Hey, Loretta.
So the last time the three of us were together, we were at the State Plant Board in Little Rock, Arkansas. Loretta, can you let our listeners know what dicamba is and what's causing all this controversy?
Well, dicamba is a weed killer that farmers have used for more than 40 years to kill weeds in fields, typically before planting in the spring. A couple of years ago, Monsanto, now Bayer Crop Science, started selling a new genetically modified soybean and a new version of dicamba that farmers could spray during the growing season. But during the 2017 season, a lot of people saw damage to their crops that seemed to be consistent with the harm that dicamba can do to crops. And so the state of Arkansas put the brakes on it. They created a task force to look into it, and they recommended a cutoff date that effectively banned its use during the 2018 growing season.
And that's kind of when we came into the story. And we've been kind of tracking the meetings, and we've been interviewing people. And this past winter, you and me and Dan all attended a hearing in Little Rock before the Arkansas State Plant Board. And they were there to decide whether to extend spraying dicamba into the growing season. And can you remind us, Loretta, what was the outcome of that meeting?
Right. So the cutoff date that the task force had recommended was April 15th. So for the 2019 growing season, the plant board had decided that it could extend it to May 25th. And that they put in more restrictions so that it couldn't be used around places like ag research stations and near certain crops, and they increased the fines for spraying beyond the cutoff.
All right, so Dan, since we were at this heated meeting in Little Rock, what's happened in Arkansas since then?
Well, here in Arkansas, we had a lot of rain this spring. Really, anywhere you look across the state, most of the state, we saw anywhere from 100 to 150% of our normal rainfall totals year to date up until July. But Arkansas really wasn't alone. There was a lot of rain in Oklahoma, and then that went down the Arkansas River, which sort of caused a ripple effect here. So you saw essentially like a 2 to 3 week period in about late May, early June, where there was just unprecedented flooding really in communities right along the river, including here in Little Rock, right in the center of the state. But in Arkansas, most of the large scale farms, especially soybean farms, are over in the Delta in the east, where the Arkansas River runs into the Mississippi River. So Essentially, growers had to contend with a lot of rain, but also flooding from both rivers right around the time they should have been planting.
Yeah, I mean, when I was there, I think I was in February. I mean, those fields, they look like lakes. So it seems like the ground has been just very saturated, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been pretty tough for farmers. It's been a very rainy planting season. And like you said, farmers are supposed to spray before they plant. So delayed in planting meant delaying spraying and ultimately more weeds.
As Loretta said, there was a deadline that they changed to May the 25th. So how did that work out this year?
Well, I think the simple answer is it didn't. A lot of farmers didn't get to plant on time before that cutoff date. Early estimates show that Arkansas has actually had its lowest total acreage of soybeans in a really long time, more than 500,000 acres less than last year. So the new figures, it's from the subset of the USDA called the National Agricultural Statistics Service, or NAS.
Right.
It gives this monthly report that basically keeps tabs on what farmers are doing. It keeps track of acreage for all types of crops, including soybeans. And for Arkansas, the NAS survey for June should have given us a good picture of our overall soybean acreage in the state. But because of the rain and because farmers generally try to give priority to planting crops with a more strict planting window, like cotton and corn, NAS actually had to resurvey the total soybean acreage again in July. And what they found was that the state had its lowest level of total acreage of soybeans since 1960. So we had 2.65 million acres, and that was down 590,000 acres from last year.
Dan, I have to tell you, like, sometimes I still have a difficult time wrapping my mind around the agriculture community. But just based on what you said, is that because of what we're talking about with dicamba, or is it because of the tariffs that President Trump has imposed with China? I mean, does any of that play into why these planting numbers are down for soybeans?
Well, it's difficult to say. I think one interesting thing is that, the sort of the big argument behind the sort of pro-dicamba side of this whole issue that we're talking about here, the big argument is that, you know, growers who use dicamba, who use the soybeans and the herbicide that goes with it, they're really seeing bigger yields. Like, they're seeing, well, of course, it's killing the weeds, like what farmers say nothing else can. But it's really just increasing the yield at a time when soybean farmers are, like you said, faced with tariffs, faced with weather pressures, and just, you know, maybe not in the most economically sound situation that they're in.
They're able to do more with less?
Yeah, I think I would say that.
When you consider the very wet growing season and the deadline for spraying, what have soybean farmers been doing this year to get through, you know, growing and harvesting their crop?
Well, I think a good example of this would be a trip I took to the Delta recently to Northeast Arkansas. I'm glad you guys mentioned the plant board meeting you all were at in February. If you thought that was contentious, this was a very interesting trip that I took. So I went to Keyser, Arkansas, which is in Northeast Arkansas near the Mississippi River, kind of right across the river from Memphis. And I went with members of the plant board to a University of Arkansas Division of Agriculture research station. So it's essentially a big farm with tons of row crops, and they essentially do experiments there. And sort of the whole point of the trip was for Dr. Norsworthy to show the plant board members sort of that this is affecting him now, like now it's personal. So I just wanted to play a little bit of tape of what he was saying, that essentially farmers are violating the spraying cutoff date around him.
Go back up and we stop up here at the tree. There's not a garden. You go to Keyser up there. There's not a garden up there in Keyser that isn't damaged. The trees, the oak trees there around that research station, those pin oaks have dicamba. There's a sycamore tree out there. You can go out there and look. It's got dicamba on it.
Essentially, he was telling us that they have lost all the research. You know, the crops aren't totally destroyed or anything, but just due to the fact that dicamba has been sprayed, has sort of invalidated all of the research that they've been doing. And one thing he did say was that essentially the damage he was showing us proved that people were violating the May 25th cutoff date, because he showed us more mature soybean plants that were damaged. He showed us beans that they had planted with the hopes of people having stopped spraying. They planted them well past the cutoff date, and they both showed signs of damage.
I'm just curious. I mean, one of the things that I remember them talking about when we were there in February is that they wanted to make a buffer zone around the areas, like the university areas where they would be doing agricultural research like this. I'm assuming that buffer zone was not adequate, that the effects of dicamba were not kind of making their way over onto University of Arkansas's research center.
I had talked to Jason Norsworthy as well after his show and tell to the plant board. And one of the things that he told me was that it was pretty clear to him that the dicamba had drifted pretty far because he has a 1 mile buffer around the research station. And in addition to that, he knows that none of the immediate soybean fields around him were planted with dicamba tolerant beans. And also that means that they didn't use dicamba. So it's one of those big problems of dicamba that if there's enough of it in the air, it's really, really, really hard to know where is it coming from, how far it came. But we can assume that it came at least a mile.
Well, I think it was interesting during the tour, Dr. Norsworthy showed us a research plot where they had sprayed with dicamba right next to non-dicamba tolerant soybean fields. So we actually saw what drift looks like, not volatilization. We actually saw what drift looks like as compared to volatilization. Right. So it's very sort of limited when it drifts. You know, you can kind of see like the gradient pattern of damage. You know, it gets less and less the farther away it gets from the field that's been treated with dicamba. But for the rest of the fields that we saw, it was just uniform damage, sort of the way Norsworthy describes it is landscape damage. And you see this kind of extending to other plants, to sycamore trees, cypress trees, things like that. And like Loretta said, it's because of the sort of atmospheric loading aspect of it and the inversions that happen in the delta. And also there's this little, I wouldn't call it a mountain range, but it's called Crowley's Ridge. It's essentially this little ridge that runs right along. It sort of divides the delta from essentially the rest of Arkansas. And that, like, when you think of a place like L.A. or Mexico City, like the mountains sort of trap in pollutants, that's kind of having the same effect here in the delta and trapping all that dicamba in the air.
Loretta, do you know what all this means in terms of what farmers are planting and what they might plant next year?
Basically, think of it a couple of ways. There are farmers who planted because, you know, they looked at the weather and everything and thought, okay, I've got to do something else here. But then there were also farmers who planted defensively. By defensive planting, by the way, what I mean is they planted the dicamba tolerant soybeans, but they didn't necessarily spray, but they wanted a soybean harvest. So they planted those that they knew couldn't be damaged by any dicamba floating around or being, you know, drifted on or anything like that. So there was that this year, although we don't know how many.
The controversial herbicide called dicamba has farmers in Arkansas divided over its use. And while it holds down weeds, some growers say the chemical has harmed or killed their crops. After a break, we'll find out how many complaints Arkansas regulators have received and what this may mean for the harvest and planting plans for next year. I'm Trey Kay, and this is Us and Them from West Virginia Public Broadcasting and PRX. Our show is supported in part by the CRC Foundation and the Daywood Foundation.
Music lifts us up and brings us together, even when we can't get together in person. Mountain Stage brings you live performances on the air, online, and in our podcast. They remind you how it feels to be in a live audience listening to live music. This is Larry Gross, host of Mountain Stage. Find a link to our stations and our podcast online at mountainstage.org.
You're listening to Us and Them. I'm Trey Kay. Over the past year, I've been reporting a story about the chemical dicamba with my colleague Loretta Williams and also Daniel Breen from KUAR and Arkansas Public Media. Hey, Dan. When people in Arkansas think that they have been hit with a pesticide or an herbicide, they can file a complaint with the Arkansas State Plant Board, right?
Well, yeah, that's right. And in 2017, the State Plant Board had almost 1,000 complaints. It was really sort of a an anomaly for the plant board. And actually, the plant board is still, they're not working through 2017 cases anymore, but they're still working through the cases they received in 2018. So, I mean, it would kind of be fair to say that the plant board's been overwhelmed by this, by the number of complaints they've received.
Are there still a high number of complaints from 2018 and here in 2019?
So they did go down a bit. In 2018, there were 456 complaints just in total. That's dicamba and other herbicides, other pesticides, things like that. There were 200 specifically dicamba-related complaints in 2018, and the plant board is still working to close a few of those. It's a little lower this year. There's 416 cases so far. 198 of those are related to dicamba specifically, or I should say alleged dicamba use. So far this year, 28 of those have been closed, and they found actually no violation. But last year, we saw 32 cases that were violations that they had found that either dicamba had been sprayed beyond the spraying cutoff date, or that growers had failed to keep records of it, or they had an expired license or something like that. And like I said, bear in mind that the plant board is still working through cases from 2018.
The thing is, Dan, there is a cutoff date, and it was set by the Arkansas State Board, and that's the law. I mean, wouldn't one would assume that people would want to obey the law? I mean, does there seem to be concern with of people violating the law?
Well, you would think that people would want to follow the law, but apparently that's not the case. I did actually talk to someone at Kaiser when we were on our trip to the research station with the plant board who did essentially follow the law. His name is Tom Burnham.
And I've been farming for 33 years. I started with my dad on a 700-acre sharecrop farm. And me and my brother and my dad built a 13,000-acre operation, mainly me and my brother.
He's a grower. He grows all types of things, but he has a sizable soybean farm right on the state line in the far northeast corner of Arkansas, right on the border with Missouri. And this year he planted Liberty Link soybeans. It's a non-dicamba-tolerant soybean variety. And essentially, he was pretty mad. He essentially lost all of his soybean crop, pretty much. And he, like you said earlier, you know, farmers are often arguing that this is for their livelihood, essentially. They need to turn a profit. So I just want to play a little tape of what Burnham said about that, you know, how he's not too happy about it, but essentially he can suffer the loss this year, but maybe some other farmers aren't so lucky.
You cannot be in this business and follow the law and adapt to the law, whatever it is. Maybe you need to exit this industry and get in something else. And like I say, I drove from Yarborough, Arkansas a while ago, and I saw thousands of acres of beans that's been sprayed this week. It doesn't take a scientific rocket to know that they've been sprayed this week.
Dan, I understand that you recently went to a plant board meeting. Did they discuss any of this spraying past the deadline and what to do about it?
Whenever there is a suspected violation related to dicamba, really a suspected violation in general, they have to vote on it. They have to approve what the penalty is, the fine is, essentially. They took on about three or four dicamba-related cases from 2018, and for each of those, they've raised the fine to $1,000. So for each of them, it was sort of a pattern of one violation for spraying dicamba past the cutoff, one for having a expired license, and one for not keeping proper records of spraying. But they did talk about their frustration, essentially. They mentioned that sometimes the investigators from the plant board, you know, they don't really have any legal authority. You know, they're not a law enforcement agency, essentially. So really, you know, if you're a grower and these plant board inspectors come, you can just tell them to leave, essentially. So they were kind of frustrated with that a bit. They did talk about, you know, perhaps expanding their authority. There was a lot of frustration about sort of the reactive nature of investigating, right? So plant board investigators are not going into fields and preventing people from spraying dicamba. Essentially, they're just coming in after the fact, looking around, seeing, taking samples, and then, you know, eventually working through it. And then maybe, you know, in a year or two, the grower will be fined.
As farmers use dicamba and the concentration in the atmosphere increases, at some point, this chemical may affect vegetation in urban areas. We heard in the report that we put out last spring that I drove around with a person in Jonesboro, Arkansas, and he showed me dicamba damage that was in the metropolitan area and out in suburbs. And this was a good distance from farmland. Some farmers that I've spoken to have feared that if dicamba started to encroach onto urban areas, that non-ag people would become involved in the issue. So, Loretta, do you know what's going on with regard to that front?
Yeah, well, what they were worried about has pretty much happened. If you remember in February, even, there were folks who got up, who were just, you know, non-farmers who got up and talked about their concern about it. But it's gone one step further in that organizations like Audubon Arkansas have created citizen monitoring programs. So they have an app that folks could put on their phone. And if they thought that they were seeing dicamba damage, they could take a photo, mark it with GPS, and then send that to Audubon Arkansas. Audubon Arkansas has gone as far as sort of saying that, you know, one of the things that they're looking for is to take this information to the plant board and sort of say, well, you know, some version of what up, you know. So they ran that citizen monitoring program through the end of August, and they hope to present that information to the plant board.
We have to see what is going to happen if the impact of citizens kind of intervening on this, whether that's going to have any impact, that's still to be determined.
That's still to be determined.
In Arkansas and in many other parts of the country, we are kind of moving into harvest time. So what are Arkansas soybean farmers looking for to this year and maybe next year?
Well, like we saw this year, we might see a drop in soybean acres. I mean, we were at our lowest total acreage since 1960. If it continues to rain, like we've heard in reports on climate change, including from the Environmental Protection Agency, you know, rains are going to continue. So it might be wise for some people to move away from growing soybeans. But like Loretta said earlier, you know, soybean farmers want to soybean farm, so we'll probably still see that. But I mean, looking toward the near future, if we have late planting, you know, if planting is still going on in late July and early August, which is just very, very late, you know, we're going to see a late harvest. And then perhaps we won't even know sort of what the effects of this season have been until well into next year, into 2020.
Where are we with regulations and the plant board revisiting whether or not we're going to extend or retract the cutoff for dicamba into the growing season next year?
I don't think there's much that's really on one level changed, right? So in terms of certainly not of the evidence, but you know, this is one of the tensions, right? About the evidence versus, you know, what people can, I don't want to say get away with, but the evidence versus what people will be able to still do regardless of what the regulations are, because as many people have sort of said, right now the regulations don't have a lot of teeth. If farmers feel like they want to use dicamba and it's beneficial to them, it's not costing them a lot to continue to spray even outside of any cutoff window. So as long as that is the case, and as long as they can't tell where it's coming from, you could almost ask, why wouldn't someone spray? That said, Arkansas isn't the only place where the spraying of dicamba is controversial. And there's actually a couple of lawsuits that are in the works that will come before a judge, in one in January and then one later in the spring. There is some legal maneuvering going on around the issues of dicamba and whether or not it's going to continue to be legal the way that it is in any of the states, not just Arkansas. So in addition to that, the other thing that will happen is that late in 2020, the EPA will revisit whether or not this current use of dicamba remains as it is. So there's a few things that work here, you know, that could conceivably cause this to shift around a little bit, but probably not in Arkansas, not at the plant board level.
Well, it sounds to me, Loretta and Dan, like this is something that is just going to continue on. So maybe I'll see you guys in Little Rock sometime this winter, where we'll figure out what's going to happen next.
I'm looking forward to it.
Loretta and Dan, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me and giving me this update. You've been listening to Us and Them. Our team for this show is me, Trey Kay, Samantha Gatzik, and Kate Smith. If you haven't checked out our original episode about the dicamba controversy in Arkansas, the episode is called Farm Wars, and you can get it wherever you pick up your podcast, or you can listen to it online at wvpublic.org. Special thanks to the team at Reveal, Deborah George, Brent Cunningham from the Food and Environment Reporting Network, and our investigative reporting friend Liza Gross, who worked with Loretta and I on the original report. And also thanks to Parisa Parsa of Essential Partners and Janet Harris of the Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation. Michael Lipton and Tristan Lozow wrote and performed the Us and Them show music. Mark Lerner designed our logo. The marvelous people at PRX and West Virginia Public Broadcasting make Us and Them possible. So do grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the CRC Foundation, and the Daywood Foundation. Us and Them was originally developed with assistance from the mentorship program at AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio. We'll see you next time on Us and Them.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.